This is Tim McHenry, producer of the Rubin Museum of Art, and you are listening to the Red Book Dialogues on WNYC's Talk to Me series.
It's funny, Tim mentioned this used to be Barney's, and it's a museum that houses gods and goddesses. And last time I was here, when it was Barney's, I remember seeing Oprah buying shoes. So we've sort of moved from American goddesses to goddesses of the East. But there's an image here from the Red Book that I think, rather than go in any introduction, Tim gave a wonderful introduction of what this evening's about. So I think I'd like to give Mike the image and just take a look at it, and you can tell us what you think.
Well, my initial reaction to it is that it's a ship on a turbulent sea with a turbulent sky behind it, and fish below, which could maybe represent demons coming up to overtake the ship. And it looks like the person at the rudder sort of disappears, so they may be directionless. And the fish looks pretty scary.
Yeah, what about the fish?
Well, if it's an interpretation of a dream, it's obviously something coming up from deep, and that represents fear. And but then again, maybe not. Maybe it's just doing its own thing, mm-hmm. and has nothing to do with the boat at all.
So what if this image were to represent, say, a psychological state, an emotional state? How would you see it?
The entire image?
Say the entire image, or any part of it, anywhere you want to go.
An emotional state, I guess confusion, possibly dissatisfaction. And like I said, the fish seems to represent fears to me.
What kind of fear?
I guess all the things that personally I keep in check, you know, the things that I'm afraid of, I guess subconsciously and also on a conscious level. And the ship is sort of like where I keep my everyday life and try to keep it afloat and not let the fish come up and the fears overtake me.
That's a great way of describing it. So you're saying that the boat represents how you carry yourself in life and how you live on a day-to-day basis, and the fish you keep below.
Or I hope to keep below.
Is there anything you can connect to the fish? Is there anything, say, in your life that you'd want to talk about that the fish could represent or that you could see as being that fear that you really want to keep below?
Well, sure. I mean, I can relate it even to tonight. you know, I have been thinking about this and not really knowing what was expected of me, and was hoping that I would get an interesting picture because I didn't want to come up here and have absolutely nothing to say about the picture. So that was one of my fears, and I guess it's a fear of inadequacy and ties in with other aspects of my life, you know, my regrets that I've had about not finishing my education, et cetera, and my station in life. And, you know, the ship, like I said, is just would represent me keeping afloat and doing the best I can under whatever situations. Hmm.
So the fish in some way, that's interesting. So it both represents fears and also regrets. So it represents both the present and also the past for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, we were when we first talked before, somehow the image of a colonoscopy came up. not related to Mike necessarily. And we were talking about sort of that in terms of the image.
Well,
but we'll get to that later.
Well, I mean, it could be a mental colonoscopy.
Yeah, what would that be? What do you imagine a mental colonoscopy would be?
Well, having the contents of your brain and your emotions be sort of probed from the outside, which is kind of what therapy is supposed to do. Mm. And it can reveal more about you than you possibly want to have revealed.
That's one way of doing therapy. And personally, I think that that it's not the type of therapy that really helps so much because, you know, in the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, and I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Not at all.
It's Jesus was quoted as saying, Jesus said that if you bring forth what is within you, what is within you will save you. And if you don't bring forth what is within you, what you don't bring forth will destroy you. And so the image of the colonoscopy would be the therapist that really tries to go down into the person, into the patient, and dig out and pull up. And it can be experienced as very violating. And it's interesting because a colonoscopy, you also go in through the back end. And you do it while the patient's asleep. So basically, it means sort of going beyond the person, going beyond what they don't know about, and kind of sneaking behind their back and trying to pull stuff out of them. And that's not so much a bringing forth as it is a pulling out in that way. And that would be sort of violating. And so tonight, I sort of look at this as more of a bringing forth and us having fun with the images. So it's not the colonoscopy model. It's more of the... Sir Joan's laughing. It's more of the, you know, the other model. Just sort of let's have fun and let's see what flowers out of this.
Okay. Well, I like what you said just now about revealing everything inside of you. Can destroy, or maintaining things inside of you can destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that. I think that everybody struggles with demons they have inside, and we all have some that we can't get rid of. There are some that we can work on, some that paralyze us, and, you know, I'm speaking from personal experience. I have numbers of things that stop me from doing other things or give me self-doubts. So having them within me creates a problem.
Mm.
But getting them out is a very difficult process. And also, I always feel like with therapy, or even if I'm with somebody sexually and they tell me, what are your fantasies? I have a very hard time expressing them because they belong to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I let them out, then they belong to somebody else, and they're no longer mine. And I feel like I have to protect them.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. And the privacy is so important in that way.
Yeah.
And it's great that you realize that because, you know, so often, especially I think in the times we live in, where people blog about the most private aspects of their lives, and we live our lives so publicly that it's hard to know anymore what's meant to be private, and not private because it's a secret or because it's shameful or because something's wrong with it, but private because it's sort of holy and sacred and it's part of who we are, you know, and it's part of what makes us up and it's something we get to keep of ourselves.
Yeah, and I've always had a problem with that aspect of things. I tend to be a pretty private person about certain things, and I grew up in a family with a mother who was very controlling and didn't respect boundaries. So I had to work really hard to hang on to what was my parts of myself and to become independent. And through that lesson, I've learned to not trust people a lot. So that's one of the things that's inside me that can destroy me.
Can you connect that to anything in the image?
Possibly the disc in the middle of the boat might represent the core of who I am, or whoever anyone is. You know, that seems like a very important aspect of the painting, sort of a focus of it, and seems to have a place of honor there.
And what about that other aspect? You know, you say, talk about your mother that was controlling, didn't have boundaries, and say would try to almost, it seems like you're saying that would threaten the core of who you are in that way.
Yeah, yeah. That might be what the fish represents, or one of the aspects of the fish.
Hmm.
That, you know, I would lose that core of myself.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, too, that the core, I mean, describe that disc, if you would, what it looks like and what it means to you.
Well, it looks like something very precious because of the golden color. It also looks sort of shamanistic because of what looked like the horns on the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks very valuable because it has a place of honor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful way of describing it.
Yeah.
What else about the image? What else can you say about the image as a whole?
That it seems very turbulent.
Mm.
Not only the sea, but the sky as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if I wanted to interpret it, it would be that the ship is sailing through all this turbulence and the person guiding it is trying to keep it on course.
What can you say about the person guiding it?
Well, I find it interesting that there's only one person there, which sort of like ties into the whole idea of it being a person's life, one person's life. I don't know if he's holding a spear. Yes, he is, or some kind of trident. So the person is attempting to defend themselves while they're steering through this turbulent sea and sky.
What is it that they're steering, though?
What they're spearing?
What they're steering.
Oh, what they're steering.
Yeah.
I guess the boat and maybe all the colors on the boat represent all the aspects of the conscious life. Like I said, you don't see the rudder in this, so there's no clue as to whether or not this person is actually steering the boat or not.
Right. And that's interesting. The rudder is actually off the picture. It's not there. Because if you describe the circle as the core of who you are, and is what's precious in you, then it's interesting because then there's something behind that staring it. And that's what I wonder, you know, what that is. So there's this pressure, you're saying that there's this precious part of you that's being held there, and then something's guiding it through. And something's guiding it through the turbulence.
Well, I guess it would be whatever my life experiences are that have helped me through bad times or helped me with my fears. That's what would be steering it.
Can you think of any experiences that you've had, if you're comfortable talking about them, that maybe illustrate or describe what you're talking about?
You mean in terms of negative things that have happened?
Just anything, really. You know, because you've talked about... Because I see this image as also depicting a journey. And you've talked about, you know, the journey that you've had to get to where you are in life. And you talked about, you know, you grew up with this mother that you thought, that you say was violating of boundaries. And you talk about, you know, experiences that you've had or you've sort of alluded to where you've really had to protect yourself. And I'm wondering if you're comfortable sharing what some of that journey has been for you. And actually maybe even seeing how it fits in with the way that you see the image.
I guess one of the biggest issues that's come up in my life is when I discovered I was HIV positive and wondering if I was going to survive, what my life was going to be like afterwards. And there are still many fears connected with that. And, you know, I've had to learn how to navigate that aspect of my life.
Hmm. When did you discover you were positive?
It was my New Year's present of 2001.
Oh. How has life shifted for you since then? I mean, how has it affected you in the sense of this?
Well, initially I went through a terrible period where I lost tremendous amount of weight and just didn't know how I was going to deal with it, didn't know if I was going to survive, and initially didn't believe that I was going to survive. And it was through help of friends, one of whom happens to be here tonight, many of my friends who are here tonight, who helped me realize that, yes, I can get through this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as far as how it's affected my life in other ways, they're just practical things, having to take so many pills every day, having to be on a schedule and remembering what you have to do to stay alive. And also how, to some degree, it's removed me from certain possibilities of connecting with other people. It's created a barrier. It's once again sort of like coming out as being gay, because you have to reveal yourself to people about this. And, you know, it's scary knowing how people are going to react to it. Some people react very well, and some people might be shocked or disgusted by it or afraid of it. So navigating that is always on my mind.
Hmm. In some ways, you could look at these very difficult things that we have to deal with in life as, I think, being represented by that monster, the sea monster, that is really there just below the surface, you know, that can attack us or can swallow us up. And, you know, I don't know if you can experience it that way.
Yeah, I mean, these, like I said before, that sort of can represent all the fears I have about my shortcomings and, you know, what the rest of my life is going to mean. And they're always on my mind. It's not like I can escape them, which you could interpret the person in the boat attempting to escape the realities of their life, and you can't escape them. They're always there, the good stuff as well as the bad stuff. And, you know, try as you might to exercise your demons, I think we can get rid of some of them, but I think there are some core things that we never can. And I had said this to Tim when he first interviewed me about this project. I told him that he asked if I had been in therapy before, and I said, yes, I've been in therapy many times and always seem to wind up back at the same place. Mm. I know what my demons are, but nobody's been able to help me get rid of them. They're always there.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think one thing about this image in terms of getting rid of the demons is that, you know, so this is a boat. And if you look at the ship as representing, say, our life, our journey through life, and you mentioned, you know, maybe the ship is trying to escape. The ship can try to escape, but one thing about life is that these creatures are always there under the sea, and that's where they belong, and that's where they live. So they're part of the sea, and they're part of the scheme, and they're part of the structure of it. And ships are built for journeys. So ships in that way are also part of the sea. So the whole, you know, the ship in the sea, in the sky, in the creatures below the sea are all one. Meaning that they're all part of this cycle and part of this process. So trying to get rid of the demons, if we look at the images like the demons, in some way would be like trying to get rid of the fish or the creatures of the sea. And if we got rid of the fish and the creatures of the sea, what would the sea be? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the sea would certainly be calmer. But I see what you're saying. It's like you have to take the sour with the sweet, and you know, if there aren't challenges in your life, then you never grow.
Yeah. And it's not to minimize any of the difficulties that any of us go through in life. And it's not to say that, you know, we'll just get over it, or isn't it great that we have these difficulties because we grow? The fact is that they're just there. You know, they're just there. And there are these monsters that are beneath the sea. And there are boats that travel across it. And the only way, I think, to avoid those monsters beneath the sea and the turbulence is not to build the boat. You know, say to stay on land.
Right, but if you don't build a boat, you get nowhere.
You what?
If you don't build a boat, you get nowhere.
You get nowhere. No, exactly.
Which is even worse than riding across a turbulent sea in reality.
Yeah, because I know you left home when you were pretty young. Right?
Yeah, I left home when I was 20. I threw some things into a paper bag and left Long Island and called a friend that I had met at Gay Activist Alliance and asked if I could sleep on his couch for a week, which turned into a month. And then I met one of my best friends, and I eventually moved to the village and basically let life happen to me because I didn't have any plans. I only had an associate's degree from college. And fell into a job through the friend I stayed with, and fell into another job, which actually brought me to Kathy Chalfont's home over 32 years ago and so put me on another path. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's worked for me, and I count my blessings for where I'm at now. I always do wonder, though, what would have happened if I would have continued my education and done what I had really wanted to do.
What was that?
I had wanted to be a commercial artist. And just never pursued it. It was more important for me to get out of my house than it was to stay in school.
So you basically packed your bag and jumped into the boat.
Yeah, exactly. And a rudderless boat.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. Do you think, if you look at where your life is now, does it seem like that your life has been rudderless? Or does it seem, if you look back over your life, is there a sense that there was some direction to it? And I don't know. I'm not trying to say it should be one or the other. Just...
There are aspects that are rudderless. I've just put one foot in front of the other, and I've been very lucky in terms of my work, where I've always managed to have work. And you know, but again, it wasn't necessarily something that I went out and sought. It normally just kind of falls into my lap. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I think that, you know, I do control the rudder in terms of just being responsible for what I have. I have to be responsible to the people I work for. Mm-hmm. So I have to have some direction there. And, you know, I've had some dreams that have come real. And, you know, I guess I need to have my hand on the rudder to have made that happen.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm still wondering who that is in the back, with rudder or without rudder.
Well, if this is supposed to be about me, I would say that that would have to be me dealing with all the things that are going on in my life. I do find it interesting that the person with the rudder is also pointing the trident straight ahead rather than at the sea monster.
Hmm.
I don't know what that means.
What do you think? What would that mean? If you took a stab at it. Sorry for the pun.
Really?
Right.
Maybe the person is guarding against what future demons or problems might come along and is preparing himself for those eventualities.
Because in some way, too, you know, what he's pointing, it's hard to see it here. I mean, in some way, it's no different than this, you know. It's this that I'm holding. You know, it's something that points and directs and highlights and is, in some ways, it differentiates. You know, oftentimes swords and things that cut are things that divide and things that penetrate. And penetrating and being able to separate and divide in some ways is a hallmark of consciousness. We can say, okay, I want this and not that, or this is good and this is bad. So in some way you can look at that weapon as kind of a directionality. It is a way that we insert ourselves into life, you know, the decisions that we make.
Yeah, and I noticed that he's pointing it forward. So that's a hopeful sign, because if he was pointing it the other way, it would mean that he was being pursued by things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe if the boat represents the conscious level of my life, the trident is telling me that I'm moving in the right direction. I don't have to be afraid of the things that have happened in the past.
Yeah, because it's still moving forward. Yeah. In some ways, I think it's saying that the stuff that happened in the past is behind, and this boat's moving forward.
Right.
Because this image is, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about the image, that it represents, and it's an Egyptian, ancient Egyptian motif, and it represents this cycle of the journey of the sun on a daily basis. And the sun would rise, and when it got its high to the high point in the sky, it would set again. And when it then went below the horizon, the theory was that, or the myth was, that it would be swallowed by this giant serpent, Apophis, that would devour the sun, and it would come out the other end and rise again.
There's the colonoscopy.
There's the colonoscopy, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's a cosmic, ancient colonoscopy.
Colonoscopy.
The ancient Egyptians were first in a lot of things.
Yes. Not only did they know how to embalm.
Right.
So what would happen after the serpent swallowed the sun?
Well, no one knew. That was the thing. I mean, once the sun went down and it was swallowed, when it was swallowed, who, you know, you don't know that the next day is coming. You only know that it's dark out, and then that's what you're living with. And you're living in, and you know, and you're living in this in the night. And then the sun would rise again, and when it rose again, it was as if it were a new sun. It's a rebirth of the sun.
That's what I was going to say. So maybe it's saying that every day is a new day, and you have to face different challenges, and each day you have a chance to be reborn.
Yeah, in each moment there's a chance to be reborn. But it doesn't mean that you're reborn the same way that you went in. Because it also represents, it's an image of our consciousness. And the water symbolically represents the unconscious. And our consciousness and our ego, when I say ego, that's what we think of as I, our sense of I-ness, or ourselves, is really born out of the unconscious. So when the sun rises, it's almost like an infant. When an infant just starts, and a child just starts to have an awareness of who they are, and then through life, they have more of a sense of their selves as opposed to what's other. There's a birth there, and there's a renewal. But the possibility of being swallowed up is always there. So you talked about having to struggle with some very difficult issues in life, some very difficult circumstances. And when we go through that, I mean, I'm sure we've all gone through experiences where something has just made us feel like we've fallen apart. And we just basically are coming apart, and we don't know who we are or how we're going to deal with something. And it's just this most horrible thing, and we don't know how we're going to get through the day. And you feel all kind of fragmented and lost, and you feel like you're going crazy, and you can't get your head above water, and you know, and you've just been swallowed up by this great big monster, and that's what this image is. And something happens to you when you go through that. And that's what that image represents. Something happens to you when you're in that process, and eventually, hopefully, you get through it and you come up again. And then you're back on the sea, and the sea is turbulent or it's not turbulent. But that's how I see that image.
Well, that makes sense, because I think we can all be swallowed up by things that we keep suppressed within us. I also tend to think that those things, everything about ourselves, including the stuff we suppress, sort of goes to define us.
Mm-hmm.
And without the things we're suppressing, there would be a part missing.
Well, let me ask you something else. Is there anything that you've just lost yourself in that's been joyful or has been revivifying, has been sort of rejuvenating? Anything that you do for fun or anything that you just feel like you've let go and you've kind of lost yourself in that way too?
That's happened at periods in my life when I used to paint. I used to get lost in that. I would just paint for hours, and I would paint on my kitchen countertop, and I would forget about eating and other things like that. I have to say there are probably very few times in my life when I've felt truly happy.
Hmm.
Or content. One of the times was when I bought a house upstate New York, and I can remember telling a friend who's here tonight that I was content having this house. It was a lot of work, but it was mine. It belonged to me, and nobody could take it away from me, unless, of course, I really messed up and didn't pay the mortgage. But that sense of having my own place, I guess, is what made me feel content. And it was mine, and nobody could cross the boundaries unless I allowed them to.
Do you still have the house?
Yeah, I have it, and I have another house that... I wanted to be a landlord. I mean,
sort of a houseboat.
Yeah.
What about the painting? Because you've talked about painting, and it sounded like that was something that you were able to lose yourself in. Or that was something that...
Well, I haven't painted in quite a number of years, and I haven't done other things in a number of years. I used to go drag racing. I raced every Sunday during the summer for 10 years down in Englishtown, New Jersey during the 80s, and I really liked that. That was another thing that would take my mind off of stuff. When I was working on my car, I would be very focused on that. Basically, having this house that made me content also made me deny certain other aspects of my life. I was not capable of pursuing other things because all the money went towards the house.
Mm.
I couldn't have a house and a car that I could go racing. And I think to me it was more important to have the house because it's... And having the rental house is my security for my retirement, because one of the demons that I have is that I never learned how to take care of myself financially. In my family, that wasn't something that was discussed. And I had no knowledge of, you know, how to get a mortgage or anything. When I first started looking at a house, I thought you had to have cash. And, you know, took all the stuff I had in a mutual fund and turned it into cash, which was a big mistake. And, so that's been one of the other demons that I've had.
Do you regret not racing now? I mean, or even not painting? Is it something that you miss or that...
I do. I do go to the races like a couple of times a year. I go to Las Vegas. They have a four-day meet there of all the professionals. And every time I go, I think, you know, I should get my helmet out of the attic and just go race my little Honda Fit at the track across the river, which I could do. Yeah, I do regret it. And the painting, I recently brought all my paints and my canvases up to my house and put them up in the attic with the hope that one of these days I'll finish doing all the work that I have to do on the two places and will be able to take the time and do that because I really did enjoy it.
I think that's important in life, to do these things that are calling us. Because I think we can spend so much time trying to build the boat and trying to make the boat strong enough to avoid it being swallowed up by the by the creature, and forget the purpose of the journey in some way, or that we overbuild it. And the thing is that the boat's going to get swallowed up anyway, no matter how strong it is. So it's going to get swallowed up and then come out and get swallowed up and then come out. And then, so if we do sort of focus so much on swallowing, on building the boat, then in some way the boat's rudderless because it can't both be steered and consciously built at the same time.
Well, I don't feel like my boat's been swallowed up yet.
Yeah.
I feel like I've managed to keep it afloat all these years, and I do take your point about making the voyage, that you can spend so much time sort of armoring yourself against your demons or the future that you forget about what happens now and what gives you pleasure.
Yeah, like, see, I have a different, I don't think that guy's staring at is you in terms of your ego or in terms of your consciousness. I think it is that hidden part of us, what Jungians call the self, and it's sort of this deeper part of who we are and that part of us that directs us that we're not conscious of. And religiously it can be called God and different mythologies have different names for it, but that there's some force that's sort of responsible for, for sort of maintaining our journey in that way.
Well, I'm not a very spiritual person, and I don't believe really in a higher power. I've been to 12-step programs, and the minute they start talking about a higher power, it turns me off completely. So I don't see it that way.
So I'm curious. It's interesting. So you see yourself both as the disc.
No, not as the disc.
Oh, okay. What would the disc be then?
Well, actually, you're right. I did say it was my core.
But I think you're onto something there.
Like what?
I don't know. Keep going. Keep going. Yeah.
I guess the disc might represent the core of what my feelings and beliefs are that belong only to me, and the captain of the ship is the one who's guarding it and attempting to keep it safe.
So that's a great way of looking at it, that it's so valuable and so beautiful. I mean, it is, in the color of it, I mean, it's gold. It's this golden treasure that is being guarded and kept safe by what's driving it. Actually, there's a mystery to the picture too, that the rudder's off of the off the page, that there is no rudder.
Yeah, and I would like to know what the words mean.
You know, you just read my mind, because no, Lou, I was just going to say, and I think, but I actually wrote down what the words are, and so I'll read them. I wrote them down on one of these. Your feedback is important to us, cards. So, well, the words, and they're written. The words mean, or the caption reads, "One word that was never spoken. One light that was never lit up, an unparalleled confusion, and a road without end."
Okay. I guess it means that we're all running around basically with no clue. But if you tie it into the image, it sort of means that you do have to keep going on whatever road you're on in order to reach some understanding of yourself or understanding of life.
This is the feeling I got from today, is that here we are all in the hull of this boat, right? Wood-lined, hopefully watertight sufficiently. But, and Mike and Michael have been at the helm and attempting to, you know, use a rudder to chart a course over choppy seas and steering certainly our fragile little bark between the two real threats of our whole existence in this culture, which of course are the Scylla of indifference and the Charybdis of ignorance, and taking us and charting us on a course to where we actually can find knowledge about ourselves.